Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secure retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in. Because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike.
Mike Zlatnik, and today it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome Jonathan Green. Hi, Jonathan.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me on the show. Glad to be here.
Thank you for coming on the show. I was just a guest on your wonderful podcast, Zen and the Art of Real Estate Investing, and we had a wonderful conversation. So it was a blast, and I'm sure we're going to have a great discussion now.
But yeah, quick intro. I'm excited.
Yeah, Jonathan is a thought leader in the real estate investing space. His podcast, Zen and the Art of Real Estate Investing, is one of the fastest growing real estate podcasts in the world. He's a lifelong real estate investor, on-market team leader, and luxury agent, as well as a certified life coach and a real estate coach. He hosts in-person and online real estate investor meetings monthly, and he is in New Jersey, not far from New York City. And Originally, he is from Brooklyn Heights in Brooklyn. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks. I'm really excited to be here. Thanks for the intro. And yeah, we did have a great time on my podcast. So I always like it when we switch the sides of the mic so I can be the guest as well. So looking forward to it.
That's wonderful. So a little bit about you, your background. You are a lawyer by training. And how did you wind up running a podcast with such a inspirational, almost tranquility name, Zen and the Art?
Well, the real estate part all starts with my dad. I mean, I grew up, my parents got divorced when I was two, so I only saw my dad on the weekends. And my dad was an attorney like I was, but all we did was look at real estate and play sports and, you know, do other things for me. He wasn't like strictly about that, but he was somebody who made the majority of his money in real estate, not as an attorney. So we were picking up checks from rental properties, meeting tenants, going to courthouse steps, foreclosures, if I was there on a holiday or a weekday. And then we went to a lot of yard sales on weekends. And I always thought it was just so I could get like another box of baseball cards, which I was all in for. But he was making an offer on every home that we were at a yard sale. He was building a relationship, having conversations. So, you know, I really watched that and then started landlording while I was in my teens in summers. So that's where it started. And then the Zen part came from me much, much later in life, about 10 years ago, just kind of being overwhelmed with my full real estate business, which is on market and off, and taking a year off and kind of doing the work on myself and then figuring out what I wanted to get out of it. And that led back to kind of taking my lifelong resources in my brain on real estate, bring it to the podcast and mixing it with a little bit of mindfulness.
That's wonderful. You're producing phenomenal content and episodes, so it's almost a little bit of giving back. I don't know how it is for you, but for me, the podcast is just a service for the community. It's a way to help folks learn and get better. So what do you like most? Do you like to invest? Do you like to teach? You have a wealth of knowledge and experiences. And what is most fun for you?
Building. If I'm not building something, I get bored. That's why I've changed careers. You know, I did a long 10 years as a practicing trial attorney, 6 years in the art world, 3 years teaching, and then, you know, on market real estate, you know, your traditional real estate teams and brokerages for like 12 years now. But I just like building things. It could be a team, you know, it could be a new company, it could be a new business. You know, I like negotiating, obviously, with my background as a lawyer, negotiating is fun for me. And I like the opportunities that present itself in any kind of investment, but that's changed as I've aged. You know, I used to be, it was fun to be more active. You know, I liked flipping. Now I couldn't be bothered, you know, because I, as I get older, I don't want to be as active. I'm more interested in trusting experts to help me place my money and keep it away from myself so I don't go and try and do another flip that is going to drive me crazy until the end. Then I love it. But yeah, I mean, building parts of the business are really exciting to me. And obviously, a lot of that is based on, you know, what I want to do for my kids and what my dad did for me. So a lot of it's like long-term generational wealth building and what will translate good for them in the future.
So what are you building now for your kids or for yourself that you're really enjoying? And if you're investing as part of that process, what are you investing into?
Yeah, so the last year, and again, as part of my podcast, I started learning about syndications. It wasn't something that existed or that I knew about when I was younger, and I was always more active investor, landlord, commercial properties, industrial, and kind of land deals. So the last year or so, I've invested in 4 multifamily syndications, which really kind of balances it out for me. I get access to multifamily, which I have no interest in running on my own or being a landlord. I get access to markets that I'm interested in that I wouldn't necessarily just buy a one-off property in. So now I'm actively involved, but I'm also learning from the general partners as I go in case I want to do that at one point, use my skills to turn into syndications for larger deals. So on the investing side, that's really, it's more building a passive creative playbook for myself that I can keep building snowballs in each one. You know, for each one of the 4 investments, they just seem like snowballs to me. It's how big I can get the snowballs, see when they're done, and then see what I can just reinvest the money in. I didn't invest in syndications in order to get the money back. I just want to keep building a bigger snowball with that separate money, kind of similar to how I invest in index funds. I know I don't need the money, so I just let it build as it comes. And then I have risk money, and risk money comes with building businesses or doing a flip here and there. There's just no good deals, you know, in New Jersey. So taking a break on that for now.
Well, I'll just add a couple of comments. First of all, you've entered the market at the right time, right? If you've entered into real estate syndications, the market obviously has gone through a reset. So if you've entered in the last year, you probably got into a whole bunch of really solid deals after the reset.
Yeah.
And then, then the other thing is, I really like what you said. I'm a big proponent of learning from your own investments. So as we all learn how to invest better, we also should be learning from the investments. And that's ultimate wisdom. The whole life, you should be learning. Even if things don't necessarily work, well, it's kind of like this, right? If you invest and you get great return, everything is wonderful, you learn less versus typically when you run into some bumps in the road. So any thoughts on this?
I feel like, you know, passive investing gets a very unusual kind of reputation because people think it's going to be easy and you don't have to do anything. But as you were saying, I don't think that you learn a lot if you're so passive that you're just not paying attention and the money just goes into your bank account. You know, for index funds, like I said, that's fine. That's the intent. I'm not going to pour over each stock in the index fund. But then I have a fund where I invest in stocks myself. But yeah, for me, I look at it as, you know, this is a learning experience for me. I want to, like I said, have exposure to asset classes that I don't want to have a one-off interest in. And I'm a lifelong learner. I just learn stuff every day, something new. You know, I've done like 50 of those master classes just because I like learning stuff. And people ask me, like, why would you take a master class on, you know, from an astronaut? I'm like, I mean, why not? It's awesome. I read a lot of books. I think it's the middle of the year. We're recording on August 11th. I'm at 46 books. So I have a thirst for knowledge, like you said. And that's why I think it's kind of crazy when people talk about the FIRE movement. I have no intention of retiring. I think what they mean is time freedom. They can do whatever they want, whenever they want. But I've been doing that, you know, for 15 or 20 years now. So for me, I'm not trying to get to retirement. That just means I'm like closer to dying. So I feel like I'm going to be active no matter how old I am, whether that be investing in smaller parts of business where I'm a passive, you know, participator, but I'm still watching the updates every month so I can learn what's going on in the market. And one thing I wanted to mention, as you were saying, you know, I got in at a time into syndications where some people made mistakes. I didn't because I did so much research and talked to so many people about syndications before that I knew to bet on the operator. The deal was important. The debt is super important to me, but the operator was the most important thing. And that 3 of my 4 are with the same operator. So I just keep putting the same, you know, putting it into the same kind of flow that I've already been working with.
Well, let's dissect this a little more. You've just been backing the same jockey, right? They say jockey be ahead of the horse, exactly what you said. And I strongly believe in it. At the same time, I think there's some prudence in diversification.
Yeah.
So how do you plan to approach this? Continue to do investments with the same operator, or keep looking for additional strategies, maybe less correlated to a specific operator market? If this is multifamily, are you looking to do anything in industrial, shopping, yeah, or debt versus equity? Just curious, what are you thinking? And I do concur, if you find a great great jockey and they're doing well, well, kind of don't change things that aren't broken per se.
Yeah, I mean, I think I look at when those go full cycle, I'm probably thinking I move one into a different asset class, same type of structure, you know, that operator does multi. I'm pretty full with multi. I definitely don't need a more exposure to multi. I'm much more interested in self-storage or mobile home parks. Again, not as an active investor, although I would be active for self-storage. I've tried to purchase those myself. So the thing about it that's interesting is they're not, those are in different markets. Two are in Chicago, one's in Madison, Wisconsin, and then the one with the separate syndicator is in Dallas. So my exposure can still be with an operator in different markets, you know, and that's what's interesting to me because I like the geographical diversification as well. But yeah, I'm interested in different asset classes because I participated in different asset classes as an active investor over my life. I'm really interested in kind of the way that boutique hotels are going. I've had a lot of guests on that. That's interesting to me. And personally, I'm probably going to get back into the short-term rental space on the more active side. I've been aggressively looking up, you know, we're both in the Northeast, so I've been looking in the Catskills and Greene County because I'm licensed up there as well. So that's kind of my next investment. Just bought my daughter a house. That was an investment as well. And, you know, these are all things that I'm interested in. There's not that much that I would stay away from. It's really more operator based. But, you know, having the podcast, as you know, you get access to so many people. So I think I kind of got excited about syndications and I'm pretty full. I don't know that I need to like invest in another one right now. But when one of those goes full cycle, I don't anticipate like pulling it out to do something active. But as you were saying, I do think I'd probably diversify a little bit more, different asset class, more likely self-storage, because I feel it's pretty recession resilient.
So congratulations on your daughter's...
It's exciting.
Is it an investment property or a house that she's going to live in?
She's living in it. You know, I bought it as an investment property just to, in the way that they wanted to close on it. But yeah, I'm like renting it to her, but I bought it for her and it's eventually going to be hers, or we'll sell it out and then she'll get the proceeds to get a bigger house later. But we're, you know, she'll be good in this one for 5 to 10 years if she wants to be.
Yeah, well, that's congratulations. They say the first property you should buy is always primary residence. I don't know whether it's true or not, but at least there's something to that wisdom.
Yeah, I mean, so that's a really interesting concept. I would just post it on something. I've made a lot of money on my personal residences in my life. I learned it from my dad. My dad was a flipper and also just an opportunist. So I've doubled my money on several houses in very short time frames, you know, what I consider short, like 4 or 5 years. And then I would just move. And I don't think that the traditional investment world looks at single family home buying. You have people who say, you know, never buy a house, you know, with a mortgage or pay all cash or all of these different things. But I mean, look, where we live, I just sent something out this morning. Somebody bought 2 years ago at 1.1. It's worth 1.5 now. Well, where else are you getting 400 grand in 2 years just by living there? Did nothing. They've done nothing to the house and they're up 400 grand. So for me, personal residences are important. I've never lived in like, you know, like big mansions. I live in nice houses, but, you know, my kids are adults. I don't need a ton of space. And, you know, same for the house I bought for my daughter. It's small. It's actually a one bed, one bath, single family home, a real oddity, but also perfect to keep as a rental later, maybe short-term rental, maybe midterm rental. So there's a lot of opportunity there. But yeah, I'm a big advocate for, again, rates are high now, so it's a little bit different. You know, I don't think people can afford the house that they wanted before, but you know, maybe that's all something to figure out. I still think getting into the market and buying houses is where we are, at least. You literally can't miss. Every client I've had in the last 10 years is up between like $200,000 and like $800,000. And that's crazy.
Well, that's been a nonstop bull run kind of in Northeast. after the great financial crisis. So anything you bought since that time has continued to do relatively well. And you're right, you could actually get a significant appreciation on your home. But let's continue talk a little bit about kind of your journey. And you like businesses, you like adventure, it sounds like you're looking into a little more passive but then active again. If you do short-term rentals, it's considered to be, I guess it's short-term rentals, and then you said boutique hotels.
Yeah.
Both are a little bit more operating businesses. They're real estate, but half of it is also operating.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious, what do you think? We prefer to buy for long term. The other thing that I'll make one quick comment is real estate moves very slow, right? You make an investment today. Yeah, sometimes you're up in a year or two, but in general, it's a 5-year cycle plus minus. So any thoughts on is it better to consider semi-active real estate, like short-term rentals, hotels? There's also senior living facilities, et cetera. Self-storage is also is semi-operating business too.
Yeah, I mean... I like businesses. I mean, I just opened my own real estate brokerage and the on-market thing. So that's kind of what I've been building for years and trying to figure out. So that was kind of a big step. It's going to be interesting to see how to make money in that business versus the big conglomerates out there. But that's kind of, that's what I like. I usually do okay like that. But yeah, I mean, in terms of short-term rentals, I see it as a real hospitality play. I think when I've done short-term rentals before, my sister and I had a bunch of them before Airbnb existed. And did really well. But the way that I look at it now is that's the only way I like to stay. I don't stay in hotels if I'm going to be there more than a weekend or it's not for a conference, because I just don't want people knocking on my door. I don't like it. I don't want to be next door to someone. So just for the way that I like to stay, most of my friends like to stay like that too. And I do think that I have the kind of curatorial ability from my background in the art world and my flipping expertise to be able to create an experience that can kind of beat everything in the market, or at least be at the top. So it looks like a pretty safe business for me to get into. I will have help. I'll either have a co-host or something. I don't want to be fielding every single call, but I'm like, I use a lot of AI for my own personal self, but in business, I'm like really, I wouldn't say I'm against it. I just don't use it to communicate with clients or to do the personal relationship building, which is where I think people are messing up. So when it comes to, you know, building a short-term rental business, sure, there'll be some back-end automation, but generally they're going to get to me if they need to get to me to make sure that the reviews go up and the algorithm, you know, works for that.
Okay. I mean, that's a wonderful view of this. And I wish you all the success with short-term rentals.
We'll see what happens.
You don't get people reaching out to you in the middle of the night. Hey, I got a clogged toilet. But if you're self-managing, there's a little bit of risk of that. But
yeah, always, Evan. So when I was doing them before, we basically bought in areas where my sister's friends lived, and then they would just be there for. We always have on-site management close by. That's not me, so it's pretty easy, especially with my background. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where I'll get one, see if I like it again. And if it works, I'll be able to kind of scale out the way that I do it, probably using less technology than other people. But
so I have a couple of quick comments, and we'll go back to kind of what I really want to ask a question. What do you think makes a great deal? When you make an investment decision, how do you think about it? And it's different for different asset classes. So that question applies to multifamily. How do you know you got a great deal? And then how do you know you get a great deal when you invest into something a little bit more active? I'm just curious your thought process.
Yeah, I mean, for syndications, any type of syndication, like I'm looking at the debt. If I'm looking to have at least 5-year fixed debt, if I have that, I know at least the debt's pretty safe on that, as opposed to all of the problems that happen with bridge or, you know, people had to come in with mezzanine debt. So the debt is really like my focus. But I've described myself my whole life, again, going back to going to yard sales. I've looked at thousands of homes. You know, I'd walked hundreds of homes as a child. You know, my dad used to push me through the window of foreclosures because we'd have the list. No one was there. It was a different time. I would open the door. We'd look around, you know, buy for cash at auction. So I've always called myself an asset hunter. And when I, what I mean by that is I'm actually really focused on the asset more than the numbers. Of course, in large scale syndications as an LP, the numbers are important to me, but I'm looking at the debt versus the projections because that's all they are, projections at the time. When it comes to something more active, the asset hunter thing is so much more important. You know, I don't think people are kicking the tires enough. They're just, you know, looking on Google Maps and saying, oh, this looks good. You know, it's not that good. You could show up and that could be 2 years out of date. You know, I know what's going on in a basement. I know what's going on roofs. So to me, the best deal is the one that I can see something that other people can't. So like when I'm flipping, I'll buy a lot of homes that either have a structural anomaly or maybe like the last one I did had a septic. I know how much it costs to fix. It's going to scare off all the other buyers because where I am now in New Jersey, even on your dumps, biggest dumps out there, you're bidding against regular home buyers because they're so desperate. There's no inventory. So it's like, I'm not paying what they pay. So I have to be a little bit more strategical. You know, that can be off market marketing on my own. But I don't like cookie cutter houses. So if I'm going to flip a house, I want it to be weird, which means when I go to sell it, I'll have less people interested as opposed to just your standard colonial that looks like everything else. But I have more people who are obsessed because it looks different. And that's how you make the most money.
Yeah, it's interesting. You want to stand out and it could be a beauty and a curse. Hopefully you find enough of the oddities.
It's a little bit of a risk, but I mean, again, like you were saying before, like I like a little risk, but it's educated risk to me, and I always have a backup plan. So, you know, the oddities, you always have the backup plan of turning into, you know, some type of short-term or mid-term rental, long-term rentals, your last, you know, last case option. But I've run all those scenarios. But yeah, you could miss. You know, I've missed projections on what I thought was going to happen with some. But I don't lose money on those. I probably, you know, worst case scenario is I break even if the hold's very long. But yeah, that's kind of the fun of it. Same with building businesses. I mean, I can't predict if I'm going to succeed when I'm building a business, but that's kind of the fun of it. You know, can I do it? I don't know. I think I can, but we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, what you just said is pretty consistent with, I follow Howard Marks, and he's got some great pieces on risk.
Yeah.
And what's really fascinating is sometimes you don't understand the risk. You don't understand the risk before. Sometimes you don't understand the risk even after. And somehow having your internal guide assessing the risk of a given investment versus reward is the ultimate skill, because you can make an investment and it does well. And you could also make an investment and does poorly. Was it a good investment or not? And if you only judge by the results, then it's a one-sided story. But the reality is we just don't know. We don't know the future. Something looks great initially and it winds up being, you know, a strikeout, and something looks poor or so-so. Somehow you see a hidden gem and it works out.
Yeah.
So any kind of Zen lessons learned from this, on, you know, as part of the investing and kind of thinking about risk versus reward, how should folks really think about it?
Well, I mean, I think you have to assess your own kind of risk tolerance. Mine's high, but mine's high because I have a lot of experience. If I didn't have experience, I wouldn't want to have a high risk tolerance. I would want to be a little bit more careful. But if you're too careful, you're never going to do anything. You know, you're going to be in analysis paralysis forever, which generally is not real. It's just a lack of confidence because you haven't built it up or you don't know enough other real estate investors to feel comfortable. But I think a lot of it goes to perspective. As you were saying, if I do a deal and I do a flip, it doesn't do as well as I thought, but I love the product and I bought it at a good price and something happened, could be a market anomaly, could be the town giving me a red card, you know, whatever. It doesn't really faze me that much because my perspective changed when I went through that 10 years ago to kind of figure out how to be more mindful. And I think if people looked at everything as educational, you know, you don't want to lose money, but if you do, what are you going to do? Sit and cry about it, you know, for the next year, or figure out where you made the errors and don't make them again. It's like you could go to business school or you can learn by doing business. That's like what, you know, Cody Sanchez, the best business school is being in business. So I'm someone who I've done the schooling, but I'm just going to go and do it. and I'm going to see what happens, and I'm going to tinker with it along the way. It's not like I start something and then I give up. I think that's what a lot of people do. Maybe they outlay too much cash initially. They're not good with budget. They don't have a good plan. I always have a good plan, but I'm like every week I'll iterate on something different. Ooh, I don't think that's working. You know, let me play it around a little bit. But again, as you were saying, I do stick to my core idea. I'm very confident in what I'm doing. I feel like, yes, I'm going to succeed. But if I don't, it doesn't like ruin my ego. I just look at what factors led to it so I can build something different next time.
I love your conviction that you just got to do. And through doing, you learn. It reminds me of a phrase. We all learn this, but we all got it the wrong way, right? Ready, aim, fire. But it's not how it's supposed to work. It's ready, fire, aim. And refire again, adjust your aim again until you figure out what works. And the best lesson is often is not the PhD in university, but just doing it. So that's a great wisdom.
Yeah.
So just one more quick question, and then we'll maybe jump to any book recommendations.
Yeah, sure.
You've listened to, or you've read or listened to so many books. So, but quick question.
Yeah.
At this phase of your life, do you prefer a passive investment or an active investment? For, I guess, mental happiness state, and you know, maybe buying some time back, but also having enough control where you feel happy about the investment.
Yeah, I mean, I think I got into passive to give me that. And now I realize that part of my building nature is I need a little bit of active. You know, maybe it's not flipping now this year because the deals don't look good. Maybe it is short-term rentals. But I think for me moving forward, it's going to be a healthy dose of both. But everything that I do that is active will come with assistance, you know, either co-host, partners, which I'm not a big fan of, but someone there assisting me along the way so I don't get the overwhelm. And also I'm not looking to right now, like I'm not going out and saying, hey, I'm going to buy 7 short-term rentals. I'm going to buy one, see if I enjoy it again. If it's going well right away, I'll get another one and move from that. But I think being all passive, again, I'd be stuck in boredom. So I got to be building something. I might as well be doing that in the field that I know the most about. So if I'm building this brokerage, that's great. That's the on-market end. In the off-market or investment end, I still want to be building something. Again, and I look for things that I think my kids will think are interesting. That's why, like, everybody likes flipping when you have a dump and then you turn it into something great. No one likes it while they're doing it, you know, because it's terrible. But when it's over, it's good. So I think for me, you know, now I'm 54, I'm looking for a healthy mix of both, but I've put enough passive in place, you know, added to the index funds where stuff's making money on its own. So I have the like ability to just go play the other game and be active where I want to be, because I'd already made those time freedom commitments a long time ago when I really left being a lawyer.
Well, enjoy.
Doing my best.
There's an expression, life is a journey, enjoy the ride. Investment journey also needs a little bit of enjoyment too. And it sounds like you're mixing it up.
Yeah.
Great books. What comes to mind? You've read a lot. I listen to a lot of books. I'm like you.
Yeah.
We're almost same age, and I too, nobody wants to be bored. You want engagement, and actually books, and lately I've also listened to a bunch of podcasts. They're very engaging. You're listening to people who are way smarter than you are, and if anything, I think we learn much more that way than talking to people. It's kind of funny how... What do they say? Wise men, they're old, and they listen a lot more than they speak. So books and listening podcasts seems to do that. Anyway, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, well, one, the best use of time. I mean, if you're in the car, which I'm in the car all the time, or if you're working out, which I like working out, or I'm walking, which I walk a lot, like, why wouldn't I also learn? It doesn't take away from my experience. It actually enhances it. So I listen to a lot of fiction, but the best book that I enjoyed on investing that I don't think enough people know about, it's called The Wealthy Gardener by John Seforek. It's just phenomenal. It's like a half mindfulness, half investing. It actually does have stuff about gardening in it, but it's kind of like a mindful rich dad, poor dad. That's not so straightforward. But my friend recommended it to me and not enough people have read it. You know, in the last couple of years, I listened to a lot of fiction. I really enjoyed Cody Sanchez's book, Main Street Millionaire. I think people see her as kind of like a social media person. But if you read Main Street Millionaire, you're going to be out there buying businesses. And that's something that I'm also interested in as well, because that Main Street Millionaire is what's capitalizing on, hey, what are the businesses that aren't going to be replaced by AI? Great, buy those. You know, trades are unbelievable. If you can get into those businesses, it's just smart. And then you can create a legacy. And P.S., there's just tons and tons of businesses, not just in this country and several other countries, where the kids don't want to take over the business. These are businesses producing $1 million a year. And the kids are like, well, I want to do something else. You know, I want to be an English teacher, because they don't realize the power of business and the compound interest that it's had over, you know, 25 years. So they want to sell those businesses to someone who actually wants to take care of them. So I think that's going to be a real big opportunity when other things aren't going well.
Yeah. Appreciate you sharing. Great two books recommendations and the wisdom of the day. Don't go to college to get a degree in jurisdiction, right? Lawyer's going to get replaced. Become a plumber. How about that? That's likely have your own plumbing business. That's
you'd make more money. Half of my friends from law school aren't in law. We all use our skills, you know, that we learn. So it wasn't a loss, but half of them are doing something else.
That's fascinating. What's the best way for folks to reach out to you?
Yeah, you can find me at social. It's Trust Green with an E at the end, and the podcast Zen and the Art of Real Estate Investing. LinkedIn's a great way to find me where the business people are. I never answer my phone because it's just a terrible use of time. So a lot of people give out their phone number. I'm like, you can get my phone number. It won't make any difference. But yeah, no, I just appreciate having conversations. Great to be on the other side of the mic with you. And I really appreciate spending the time here.
Thank you, Jonathan. It was wonderful to have you. Looking forward to chat with you soon again. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike's slot name. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.